In every age, God raises people up to speak the truth to the world in a way that is currently relevant. Though our opinions should not be held with the same esteem as the biblical canon, we still carry the hope of Christ to the world. Our society has forgotten what it means to follow Christ. The bright lights of truth seekers are barely visible in the dim twilight of a post-Judeo-Christian society. We all see the darkness coming. All we can hope is to share the light that He has entrusted to us. This is Modern Apocrypha. Hey, I'm Jared.
And I'm Greg.
And this is Modern Apocrypha.
Welcome, everyone.
So, Greg, you wanted to talk about things that don't need to be talked about anymore, or something.
Well, something along those lines, yeah. We're seeing in pop media, we recently had a discussion about who has the most eyes and ears being really important. And I suppose on some level, it's good to see that some of the liberal media places have gotten an extreme reduction in their viewership. But where they do have viewership, I'm worried about going back to old arguments and some perhaps young people that haven't heard the arguments not being well equipped to understand what they're hearing, that it is an old dead argument. So to explain what I'm talking about, I was driving, listening to the NPR station as I was going about the other day. And on the one side, we had the common conservative argument that there is no such thing as a person without religion. There's just people that choose the religion and the people that are pushed around by the world around them into a religion of falsehoods. Or just plain horrible things we won't go into. So the argument being that religion is all bad. It causes crusades, it causes suffering, it causes misunderstanding, all of the sort of Michael Dawkins Hitchens arguments about secularism, atheism, and the benefits of non-religiosity, as opposed to, and while simultaneously ignoring that you cannot get away from faithfulness and the damages of incorrectly placed faith. So
okay,
that's the general argument that they're coming back to. And I would say it would be a dead argument. It's an argument that we've come to the end of through the original authors of Dawkins and Hitchens, which perhaps you think that those arguments began before even they, but.
Well, I think taking a perspective on this that backs up even a little further than that would be a good idea. You know, we've got this dialectic, as you referred to it, where the enemy is trying and has been trying for a long time to come up with any argument possible to push people away from God. And there's no question the Dawkins-Hitchens arguments did that, right? They definitely did that. But I don't think.
Well, and I would argue that on some level they did that, but on some other levels they can't keep God away from people at times, and they will just change the names without changing the meanings. And so if you give it a secular name and you say it's secular, but it's really just Christianity under another name, that sometimes feels like what they're trying to do. Give me the credit for what I didn't do.
Maybe, but my point is that when we're talking about enemy action, which is really what we're talking about here, we're talking about these actual spiritual enemies trying to push people away from the creator of the universe by any means necessary. When we talk about that, then we have to go, well, we have to ask the question, how long have they been coming up with different arguments and pushing whatever seems to work at the moment? So, yeah, those arguments were getting them somewhere. They were doing something effective against the people of God. And now they're not working as well. So I guess to me, it's not a question of old arguments that have been successfully dealt with. It's a question of weapons that are not working as well as they used to. Why are they still deploying those old weapons, right?
I suppose it could be a question of where they deploying those weapons, or is the question, are they just consoling those people that are still on the wrong side, or are they out there recruiting, trying to fool new idiots?
Well, and even with the new idiots, there's enough counter ammunition, there's enough counter weaponry that's available against that old stuff that you can go debunk it if you choose to. I'm still more interested in the question, why are they still deploying those old weapons? Because if you look at a person who is obviously using a weapon that has been defeated pretty successfully and comprehensively, and they know that, and they haven't found anything new to deploy, even though there are new weapons out there, that says to me that there's something else going on. And that actually points back to the dialectic. I actually think they're trying to lose. I think they're creating a power vacuum into which to deploy something like Christian nationalism, like Islamism, like, so they're creating, what they're doing is they're taking these ideas like Dawkins and Hitchens that were very effective against the mainstream for a long time, and they're bringing them out again to create a false front to fight against with the other hand of their dialectic.
Interesting, and it may very well be on a high level that's going on. This feels to me like something like a fan of a rock star where the rock star has passed away and they're coming back and saying, look at all the great things that this rock star did. And so they're living in the past in some sort of way for those people that are there. So the people vocalizing it are the fangirls. And that's just a word. It could be male or female. Whereas the people putting out the radio station or the TV, like the producers, are the people that are trying to control the dialectic. Is that does that kind of fit what you're imagining?
Oh, I think that's a reasonable thing to say. What would I say? I would say that it looks to me like, and part of the reason I bring that up is actually that I see the other side movement coming in, I see the other hand of the dialectic doing what I said it is doing, where they're preparing these new tools, well, we talked a few episodes ago about Christ as King and Christian nationalism and all of that stuff. And to me, I think this is a perfect example of exactly that, where you've got the enemy is bringing in a new weapon, and that weapon is now mimicking God. It is mimicking, they're calling themselves God's people in order to accomplish this new thing. And so when you bring up this thing of this old argument coming back around, it makes me go, well, that makes sense. And it makes sense because it's a perfect straw man to knock down.
That's fair. I will say, even in the particular discussion that I was listening to for as long as I could stand it, there was something like a tit for tat conversation between two people. And it did not appear to me that the more liberal stance was set to win or set to be favored. It was, I remember the debate between Obama and Mitt Romney where it wasn't fair. It was 2v1, right? The people that were supposed to be moderating were speaking on behalf of Obama and against Romney, and it was not a normal moderator. And this felt like that, where the NPR person was more willing to let the conservative speak and say, no, let them finish their sentence, than I'm used to seeing. And that feels dialectic to me. Like, why, usually the stance that you would find would be every cutoff, every, you know, not letting someone finish, every going to commercial, whatever, would be against the conservative. And this didn't feel quite that way.
Which is another indication when you listen to it on NPR that it is a setup.
It is a setup because it feels to me like in that space, the lack of religion argument, the secular government argument, is the liberty and freedom argument. And where what they're currently doing is totalitarian and dictatorial. And where they want to go is totalitarian and dictatorial. They just want to choose a different dictator, right? They want to be able to say, I'm the, pick the label. Right? You guys pick the label, I'll just wear it. Right? You guys pick the label, I'll just wear it, and then I'll be the leader. So they want to, the WEF has come out in their massive failures saying that they've lost trust among the people across the world. And so they need to do whatever they can, beg, steal, lie, or borrow to get everyone's trust back. Again, it doesn't matter what badge they take, as long as they get to tell you what to do and do what they want to do, regardless of you seeing what they're doing. So they want to remain hidden and do what they want to do over you using whatever badge they can.
Well, that is the dark side of the dialectic, the dark side of the chessboard, right?
Well, and you could see it in something like Catholicism as a large organization with a religious tag that doesn't act religiously.
Mm-hmm.
By its fruit, you will know it.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know. Probably it would be good to note that when we say dialectic, that doesn't mean that there are only two sides to any given thing. It means that it's an argument where you set up two different sides that are controlled by the same force to try to get people to join one side or the other. There may be a dozen different arguments going on at the same time, each of which has two sides.
Right.
And really what our job is to find the correct argument to be having. And when we're having the wrong argument, we've already fallen into the trap.
When you're having the wrong argument or using the wrong words, letting someone else define your words.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much that is the tricks of the deceiver that make it difficult to have me tell you something to tell a third party and have that be trustworthy in the current system. Unless I know you and I know the third party both. It's a difficult proposition to tell a stranger something, to tell a second stranger something, and expect that your message get to the second stranger.
Right.
And not even necessarily
for... Actually, total side note, you know what they call that?
Telephone?
They call that the Byzantine generals problem, and Bitcoin solved it.
Do you think that we can get to a place where... I guess my concern and my never-ending fear of the beast being such that if you trust the thing, right, whatever the thing is, I can't read Bitcoin. It's numbers in the, you know, in the cloud. Something has to bring that out of the cloud and let me view it, right? That last portal has to be good. That last intersection between me and the information has to be good. Otherwise, mm-hmm. whoever controls the portal can completely skew everything to where you've got the woke AI problem, where it'll filter everything. Mm-hmm.
I agree. And
well, then what do you do where if I want my source to be truth and Jesus and good, how do I filter? I mean, short of being patient and waiting to see the what the fruits of the labor are, right? Without seeing the outcomes to judge them by, how that's a difficult one to pre.
Well, you know, a lot of times that's what the discernment that you get from the Holy Spirit will give you. It will give you a window into what is the truth and what is the falsehood in this thing that I'm hearing? Because a lot of times if it matters, if it's going to affect your life in some way, he'll nudge you. You just have to learn how to listen.
I don't find that he'll nudge me in a way that I'll necessarily know the right direction to go. More like that space forward is dangerous. Either walk carefully or turn around.
Right, and that's often the case. And it's only when you're supposed to go walk in that space that he'll give you direction for how. But the point is still the same, that when it comes to what matters to us, that's the best answer I know. And I don't put a lot of attention or stock in the things that are not relevant that way. So, you know, when it comes to, for example, national politics, should we vote for RFK? Should we vote for Trump? Should we vote for, I won't say Biden because I can't see a moral case for that, but you get the point. How should we act in the current climate? Well, I don't get direction from God on that because it really doesn't matter. It whatever direction we push in isn't going to have a lot of effect on things that do matter because of the way the system is set up right now. So he doesn't actually think we need to care that much. And when he doesn't think I need to care, I try not to care. I try to focus my attention on the things that do matter. I'm not perfect at that, but that's my goal, right?
I suppose I would define before going into it what I expect for a winning case.
Right? That's the problem, if your win doesn't matter,
my win has very little to do with what you may consider a win. My win is a happy, healthy family that wants to see me. That wants to have kids of their own. They're not done with life, you know, to stop the human line with them.
Right.
I've got a healthy enough body to do things, or, you know, to
move. Right. Right. And I understand where you're going with this.
None of these things have anything to do with wealth, have anything to do with power, enough power that no one's lording over me. Right. That's important.
Right. To
me. And therefore, if I see that someone is doing those things, here recently we had, Trump's kid, had an interview with somebody and they came out and said Trump was there with his, iPad sitting there playing music at his son's, gathering like a father might, right? Being fatherly, despite the fact that he is whoever that he is, right? So Trump could give you some, he's got children that are reasonably well adjusted. He's got, you know, people that he's worked with in the past that want to come and work with him again. You know, he's got things about him that would be the fruits of his labor. The people that are not for him are typically people that don't know him or people that have been opposed to him. Like they've had a business case to be in opposition to him competitively.
With you so far.
So if you don't want to look at national politics as an important thing, and you understand what is important, wouldn't you look for those things in your politicians that are important? Are they, you know, doing things that?
Or why would you look at politicians at all? And that's the point.
Right. Don't look at them as politicians. They are human beings.
Don't look at them. Don't bother with them. Why do you care? It's like we keep coming back to a particular subject in our discussions. And I look at the subject and I go, the relevance of a lot of what we talk about is only because of the emphasis that we're putting on it at the time. And so let me use this politics example specifically. I talk to a group of people online fairly regularly. They like to talk about politics. That's where their interest is. And I keep, every time I talk to these people, I keep going to myself, what you're talking about doesn't matter. Why are you talking about it? If you and everybody else stopped talking about it, it would stop being a problem. Stop talking about it. They don't care. They want to talk about it. They're perpetuating the problem because their attention is on politics.
See, it's one of those strange words like religion or faith, or politics means different things to different people. you cannot remove yourself so far that they can come in and say that your marriage isn't legal, or that they can come in and take your children legally, or yada, yada, yada. The things that have happened through the Holocaust were legal in the space. You know, these things happen through a thing called politics. Whether or not that's what you're considering under that word or not, the Waco being somebody out in the country that's going to get run over by your country's tanks because you were not involved in politics? Because if he were involved in politics and his local sheriff were involved, that probably wouldn't have happened to him.
Well, and on a local level, we need to be. My point is that we have a focus problem, and you're insisting that this focus is a good focus. I'm saying no. I'm saying when we talk about these problems, we need to make sure that what we're focusing on is useful to the situation. In the case you're talking about, if the local sheriff had been on a first name basis with the people in that Waco compound, you're right, it wouldn't have happened, because he would have told the federal government to get out of the county, and they would have had to do it because legally that's the way it works. But at the time, if those people in Waco had every one of them been focused on demonizing and getting the president thrown out of office, would that have affected what happened to them? No, it would not, because their focus is in the wrong place. And that's what I'm speaking to. It is that when your focus gets into the wrong place, even if it's in the context of a specific issue, you wind up with a problem. So in this case, what I'm saying is where these people should have their attention, where it would matter, would be on things like which companies and which power blocks on a national level are moving in which direction, and who are they having an effect on. And if they were to try to bring those things to light and to focus on them, that would be a huge gain, because they'd actually be doing something that matters. But when they talk about who we should elect and why, they take themselves out of relevance.
Mm. There was a gentleman on the Glenn Beck program. I couldn't promise you, because he's got like 16 different shows of different names that he does. And there was a particular father that had had an issue with his children, and he was fighting politically as best he could. It wasn't working. So he went to the bank and he said, I've got your picture and I've got your bank name, and I'm going to talk to all of your customers and I'm going to shut your bank down. And in with 24 hours, the bank talked to the politician, got it shut down, because the money, right, what business was funding the politician was far more important. And playing nice and I want to talk about this, or this is a discussion about this, that, or the other, that's for your friends. These people want to stab you. They want to shoot you. They want to poison you. So attack them back, again, within
the using law. The tools that are appropriate for the particular stage in which you're engaged on. And I agree with you, and that's sort of where I'm going with this. When we talk about these things, are we engaging in an effective fashion?
It's a difficult place to say. Again, you've got to look at the fruits. You can beat your head against the wall and give them the correct thing to talk about as many times as you want. If they don't pick it up, they don't pick it up. And what seems to be sometimes the issue is that people are looking for the hot, trendy thing to talk about because they themselves are looking for some, you know, attention economy, some attention.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. And I think two final points on this. Number one, yes, it is very difficult. I just want to flatly agree. It is very difficult to pick the correct battle to be having, or the correct way to be fighting a battle. That's hard. That's important. Number two, most people haven't even realized that.
I think we're past that. I think that we've got a larger and larger percentage of people that are waking up to actual truth, which is why the WEF and all of the powers that be are shaking in their boots. My
counterpoint to that would be the fact that so many people are placing importance on the presidential election.
Okay. And I see that as people looking for their fruits. That will be the after effect.
No, no, because if you talk to the people I talk to, they genuinely fight this battle that we're talking about without regard to, no, they're still fighting the wrong battle. And they aren't even analyzing which battle they're fighting. They're just assuming the battle they're fighting matters, and they're still fighting it. And so they're wrong, and they're stupid.
They're letting someone else give them their definitions and their words, and that's the problem. Much like this NPR conversation where the idea that you can escape faith, if you call it religion or not, you're going to have faith in something. You can't escape that. We're not telling you what it is. We're saying it exists. It's like dropping an apple and it hitting the ground. It's going to happen. So, in this case, they haven't latched on to the truth of what's effective, which is follow the money, right? Who are what companies like boycotting Budweiser, what things are actually effective? And they're not on that.
Yeah, and I don't think I would go quite so far as to say that what is effective is follow the money. I don't think I agree with that completely. I think that it's a lot more complex and difficult to parse than that. But that is a place to start. And it's like that conversation we had a while back about that Mike Benz interview with Tucker Carlson, where he knows where the bodies are buried. He sees what's going on in those terms. And if you really want to fight an effective political battle, that is the sort of thing you need to be paying attention to, because that's where actual decisions that matter are getting made right now.
Well, and I didn't want to necessarily go into politics on this particular discussion, just that how to adjust yourself with the idea that old arguments are abound. They're everybody squirming and pushing to get an inch forward in the argument that they think they're in, and rehashing old arguments in strange ways.
Sure.
So whether that's political, religious, or financial, right? We'll have these arguments about money, old arguments about money again as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just pray, take a moment and recenter yourself and have the patience to remember you've already won that fight. Just take a moment for yourself and remember you've already won that fight.
That looks like a good place to me to go to break.
Right on.
All right, we'll be back in a bit. And it's live. Bright Star is finally in bookstores, which is totally exciting and cool and pretty anticlimactic for me, because I've been working on it for, a year and a half now. To finally have it come out is a huge relief, and I'm two steps ahead working on the next two things. So I actually need folks' help. I've got a Kickstarter up for a short anthology that's to land between Bright Star and its sequel in the series, to give people a bit of a wider background on the series and origin stories on some of the characters. And I actually also need people's help to decide which character I'm going to be writing the final short story in the anthology about. So if you like a particular character in Bright Star, shoot me an email real quick, jared@e6universe.com. Let me know what character you think I ought to be writing about. And if you possibly can, please head over to e6universe.com and click through on the Kickstarter and, support me if you can, because I need a successful one in the books if I can manage it. Thank you, everybody. Blessings on your day.
I'd like to take a moment to thank all the people enjoying Modern Apocrypha. As many of you have seen, I'm an avid coffee drinker, and I've been drinking North Arrow coffee for a couple of pounds now. You can find North Coffee at northarrowcoffee.co, all one word, where they list coffee of the month and how green coffee is handled. I've been enjoying some of the number 4 Honduras and some of the number 10 Peru, available at northarrow.co. If you'd like to help support us even more, you can use discount code E6 for 10% off your coffee order today. Thank you.
And we're back.
Welcome back, everyone.
So you said let's record it. What we were talking about was this sort of, I don't know, I hesitate to even go into this subject because the subject is totally boring and gross to me, but there are a whole bunch of people who are online picking on this girl who claims she converted to Christianity. She was one of the top 0.01% of OnlyFans models or something. She made millions of dollars. She says she converted to Christianity. I tend to think she probably did, but I also don't think that it's something that we ought to be giving a lot of airtime to, because brand new Christians don't need to be exposed to the world to be attacked or to be criticized or whatever. They need time for their faith to mature a little bit and their character to be shown, so they have some fruit to show for their conversion in their life, rather than trying to bring her up as a big subject and have everybody pile on. And then what ended up happening is it started sort of on the smaller side, where there were some people like Pearl Davis saying really gross things about her. And then because of the dialectic effect, because when you create a side in an argument, other people feel like they have to create another side, then Michael Knowles gets her on the Daily Wire and interviews her. And in my mind, the whole thing is the right perspective, the useful perspective to have on her as a person is great. Thank God. Hope it works out. Hope it's true. Hope it's a good thing. If it's just an attempt to get attention, we shouldn't be dignifying it with a lot of attention. And if it's not an attempt to get attention, then just acknowledging it and moving on is the healthiest thing we can do for her as a person, because she doesn't need a lot of public eye on her relationship with, you know, which she hasn't had for more than a week.
I missed this interview and I don't know this person, but you said this person is already in a relationship. They're married and et cetera.
Yeah.
What would Pearl Davis or a relationship counselor or commentator have to say about someone who's already married?
That she's gross and she's a whore and she's totally unsavable. That there is nothing there to be saved, and she's gross. And she says it loudly over and over again. And I have no idea why, because it's because Pearl Davis is a grifting so-and-so with no particular value for anyone. She's no good. But why she's commenting, I don't know, because it's something she can get attention. I actually do know why she's commenting. She's commenting because the things that Christians will defend are things like Jesus saves, and yes, he really does. And we have to speak up and say, no, you don't get to condemn someone eternally because you don't like the lifestyle they used to have. Jesus forgives and saves people. And it was obvious that if she took the tack of, no, he doesn't and won't and can't, that she would get a reaction. And because she's just a grifter and out for attention and nothing more, she went and got a reaction.
Yeah, and I don't hold the exact same opinion about Pearl Davis that you do. And
I know.
It's an arc. She's older now than when she started and all of
well,
that.
Well, and most people don't. Most people have. Most people are willing to give her a hearing. And just so that everybody else understands why I say what I say about her, because I have never actually said this on air, I grew up around people, a particular person who was a narcissistic near sociopath, but with extreme narcissistic personality disorder, who used every manipulation tactic to bring attention back to herself all the time. And so when I run into those people, my automatic reaction is to sort of like, no, don't pay attention to this. This person is actually toxic because of the way that what they're acting out of. And that's what the problem I have with people like Pearl Davis. And there are other people who show less signs of it. That's one of the problems I have with Candace Owens. She has some measure of that going on. There are others, but they have this thing going on where they are there for attention and they will do anything to get it and bring it back to being about them. And I find that to be something that I just have no time for.
I feel like on a personal level, I don't know either one of them.
Sure.
I don't want to get myself in more trouble than I'm already tending towards.
I just did.
I feel like on some level they're both useful idiots, but where Candace Owens, I feel like, is not truth seeking, I feel like Pearl Davis is perhaps not surrounded by the best people, but has been truth seeking. She's evolved over time and continues to come to a more solid personal opinion as opposed to just rehashing what other people say. There's no denying that both of them started out as teenagers on the internet making money because they're pretty and people wanted to look at them. And so they got a lot of money. And so they tried to maintain that as a business in their respective genres.
Yeah, that's true.
For the argument that Pearl seems to make about relationships and the topic that we had off the recording here, was that she seems to think that, or at least converse in the way that would make it seem that she thinks that marriage is the same as other things. It's the same as a business contract. It's the same as other relationships or whatever. And I don't remember who the woman was. She really was blessed in her space. She was speaking in a debate about abortion at the time and was just gifted with the statement that her womb, the idea of a baby, is a difference in kind. It's a different thing than being sick or normal healthcare, right? Because it's no longer one person's healthcare. It's now two people, et cetera, et cetera.
Of course.
And I don't think that someone as young as Pearl, and certainly someone not married, could possibly see it for what it is. Marriage is not exactly just a simple relationship. Something to equate it to that I've come up with is that it is food. You cannot survive without food, because you can also get bad food and overeat and all the things that happen with food. But you still would, it would be stupid to say food is bad for you, so stop eating. End of sentence. That would be a stupid statement. Right? So to so blatantly and callously throw away all of the natural institution of men and women living for each other together for life is one thing. I think that she's got a big issue, and most people have a big issue with, there's the natural right of, you will find a woman who loves you or not, you will love her or not, and that will create heaven or hell for you in that space. That's true.
Right. That's part of life. That ends up being.
Good luck with it. Yeah. Fight with it all you want, but that's the fact. And so
that's the way life ends up being, to a great extent.
To a great extent. And so on the one hand, you've got the natural effect of what life is, and then you've got the system and the naming,
right,
that says that this thing that,
right,
you're doing is called that, and because of that, we're going to do something to you, like tax you or take your,
sure,
kids or any number of things that they're going to say. We label this, right? We've got a slogan for you.
Yeah.
You don't get a choice in whether you take that slogan, right? And so children don't yet understand they've been given a slogan to mean something that is not what Christians are talking about. If you were at the beginning of Braveheart, I brought this example up many times, where you are a religious person that wants to be with someone forever, you're doing everything right, and Joe Biden or President Trump wants to come in and be the first person to deflower the bride, you would be in a situation where you would be married for life under God, but you would never get married under the government. So I believe that the space that Pearl seems to be speaking from is on a legal place. We are in a place in that terrible space where the government is so bad you can't involve them. I don't think that she's in a space that she's saying deny your humanity and don't find a partner.
I think you need to quit speaking for her, because if you go look at what she actually says, a lot of it's pretty awful. And so you interpreting through it to try to make it sound better than it is not helping your case. But when it comes to the case that you personally are making, I don't have any argument with you. I think you're just right.
I see. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, you know, it's like you say, the government doesn't belong in any of this stuff. That, right. As far as I'm concerned, that's a given. And I, that's the way I've thought ever since I was like, you know, 20. For half my life, that's what I've thought. So,
well, and this flows in perfectly well with something like Christian nationalism. You would not say that the only people that could be in office have an exact political philosophy that they must follow, because what would be the point of voting? You just have everybody's the same, right? The whole point is that we have some disagreements, and we only want those disagreements to fall within a reasonable space. Right? We don't want to debate over murdering 1 minute old babies. That's beyond an argument. You want to have that argument? Let me show you my gun.
Well, and when it comes down to it, basically the point that you're making is that we try to keep the people who have some position of power to a group that believe a reasonable set of things. And that's a normal, natural human thing to do. And that's what God gave us to do in ordering our societies. Right. And so,
but that functionally asks that you close your eyes to the fact in front of you whenever you can put on the badge that says, I am whatever you said I needed to be. Right, so the Christian nationalism is so scary because anybody could put on that badge and say, I know exactly what I have to say to get into this building. You already told me everything I have to say. I don't have to believe anything. Whereas as a Christian, we only care what you believe. What label is on you is way less important.
Well, and along those lines, and to agree with your point, you know, for most of history of the U.S., for most of the U.S.'s history, the only really acceptable set of things to believe came from a Christian moral lens. And if you didn't fall in that set of things, you could not get elected to office, because people would sort of go, oh, well, he thinks this and he thinks that. He's weird, man. And that's, and what we're seeing is a breakdown of that sort of normal thing to a point where people who believe really scangy, scary stuff can get put in positions of power, and all the rest of us end up suffering for it. And that's because people who go outside of the Christian moral lens have a set of beliefs that don't end up being blessed in life. And so, you know, it's like you said about the whole Richard Dawkins not wanting to live in a world that is not a Christian world. It's like people have got this idea that anything goes so long as it doesn't involve, you know, some kind of externality that hurts another person against their will. And that's a fine standard so long as everybody's coming at it from a basic Christian worldview. That actually is a good standard, provided everybody has a basic Christian worldview, because then you have a very minimal number of things where you have lots of conflict going on in the public space. It's when you get outside of a Christian worldview, that lens no longer works for deciding conflict. And so you wind up with chaos, which is where we're heading and where we're kind of at.
It's certainly something that I would never, as a Christian, want to institute, something that mandated only males in power, only fathers. No, right? You could, if you must have had children by the time you can serve. All of those limits, the only thing that you should, in my opinion, allow as a limit is someone who is qualified to perform that job better than anyone else.
Well, and the problem that you wind up with when you start saying should, and, you know, we should only allow people to do this who can do this. We should only, you're assuming a basic social makeup in which everyone agrees enough that you can have some kind of social order between all of the people. And right now we've gone outside of that. Western society, and the U.S. in particular, no longer have a social makeup that is that agrees on enough to where we can say this is the set of things that you have to get into a position, because the enemy is already so has already got such a finger hold that whatever our agreement is, we're going to wind up with enemy action going on inside. So the inevitable end to the state that we're in is one of serious destruction and judgment from God. And what that means, most people think judgment from God means some kind of, he's going to come and wipe everybody out. And that's not actually what that means. Judgment is a separating. It's separating the bad from the good in a way that makes it so that people can live in a reasonable and effective fashion, that you can live a decent life. That's what judgment from God is. Now, a lot of times that involves catastrophic and difficult events where lots of people die, because by the time a society gets to the point where God has to intervene, it's really bad. But really, the judgment is not about destruction and punishment. It's about separating things out so that the people who have beliefs that are going to cause society to be destroyed, because they believe that they're destroying society, those people get pushed out, or the situation gets normalized enough to where you can live in a reasonable fashion. That's where we're heading. And until we get there, we can talk about should do this and should do that and should do the other thing, and none of it matters, because we've got this plane where we can't even live in the same reality with these people.
It does certainly feel like that Tower of Babel issue where you can be speaking the same words and communicating completely differently. Yeah.
Well, and it isn't just a communication confusion. It's a misconception of reality to the point where they don't exist in the same universe we do. They exist, you know, actually this sort of goes back to the whole story thing, right? I talk about stories a lot. When I talk about how I went to town yesterday, I say I went in my pickup. I just told a story. That story communicates things about reality that I understand to be true, because we know what a pickup is. We know what they do and sort of how they work and what they're for, and they get me from one place to another. We understand those things. When a person conceives of reality in a fashion that is so different from everyone else, that it has basically, because God is the author of reality, not conceiving of reality properly means that you have lies going on in your understanding, right? It's falsehoods feeding into your understanding.
Say that again.
Because God is the author of reality and he defines the truth. When people
pause on that. God is the author of reality. What did Jesus say about those that speak against his Father?
I don't know where you're referring to.
I'll have to dig that one up. It's a particular scriptural passage that's Jesus forgives those that would speak ill about him personally, but no saving you if you're going to talk ill about his death.
Yeah, no, it's the Holy Spirit that you're thinking of. It's not the Father. He specifically says those who speak against the Father and himself will be forgiven. Those who speak against the Holy Spirit will not. But regardless, the point here is that when people get so much falsehood wrapped up in their reality that they can no longer function on the same plane as the rest of us, it's like, you know, there are physical things that are true about reality, where I can be holding a book. I got a copy of my book and I can say, this book has blue and black and light colors and dark colors on it. And if you say, no, it's just gray, your perception of reality, whether you actually believe it or not, has become so distorted and damaged that we can no longer effectively communicate. It's not just a word issue. It's more than that.
Yeah.
They have a conception of reality that no longer fits. And the only way that can resolve is some form of destruction.
Agreed. It'll be some sort of destruction. I don't know that it'll need to be violent destruction per se, but just getting rid of falsehood is destruction of falsehood.
Well, and I have never seen a case in the history books where a society got so degenerate that they were willing to do the things our society is doing, where they're murdering millions of their babies every year, where bloodshed was not required to solve the problem. But, you know, there's a certain proportionality there where when things go to a certain extent, when they get so far, then in order to fix it, the remedy is pretty drastic. It's pretty scary. But to say that it has to be that way, I don't know that. I wouldn't advocate for it, but I can sort of see things coming, you know.
Do you see the church coming together to a more solidified body, or dispersing to be a dispersed single body everywhere without walls?
We'd almost have to define what the church is better in that statement to have a useful answer, because when most people talk about the church, they do mean the body of all believers, which is, I think, how you're using it. But only they also, in some sense, include religious organizations under that rubric. And when I look at religious organizations, all I see is the great harlot. All I see is the scarlet woman riding the beast, who is destined for destruction by the system of the Antichrist, by the beast from, you know, in Revelation, who's going to destroy that. That's what I see when I look at religious organizations. And that ain't cool, man. So, no, I think there will be Christian believers. I think that we know there will. But do I think that religious organizations will be spared, or that they're not part of the problem? I think they are part of the problem, and that the more that we give room to that, the more that we don't get ourselves out of that, the more we're contributing to the problem. Same as the people who like to talk politics and act like it matters.
Fair enough.
Anything more you want to add on this?
No, I think that's where I wanted to get out to the listeners, just to rehash and re-bulwark, because a lot of old arguments seem to be rushing around.
Well, fair enough. Sounds good to me. Thanks for being here, everybody. We will catch you next time.
Till next time.